The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to hear from Herm Edwards today. We're going to talk about Alex Trebek today. This is a day where there's just so much going on. Yeah, on the political side in our country, very, you know, very uncertain times, but anxiousness is part of the deal. Anxiousness and baffling times for some. So baffling times would be a kicker leaving a 49-yard field goal like 45 yards. That would, to me, be baffling. So we'll talk about that. Eric is going to be with us here momentarily. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. When I talk about Desert Financial Credit Union, over the weekend, went through the drive-thru, got in, got out, nice people, how you doing, how's your day? I'm one of those people that I cannot handle sitting in a drive-thru line and then having people like, yeah, I'll get to you. I've seen that. It's about the people. They take care of you. They take care of your business. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. Here now is Eric Sorensen. How's your weekend?
Sort of heartbreaking if you're a fan of the local teams, but it wasn't bad.
Well, let me think. Friday night, I did a game on Cox. I had not done a play-by-play game in a long time, and it was fun. Cox called and said, Chris Harris is sick, can you fill in? Sure. And so I did Desert Edge against Sunrise Mountain with Dale Hellestray and Haley. Haley was with us, Haley Stasiak. And we're outside because our press box is so small, and in the fourth quarter it started to rain, which was fun. I just love that stuff. I didn't know if I was going to get electrocuted and you were going to do the show today. I didn't know. And man, Adrian Lara, whew, you've been telling me about him? Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. That kid can play.
I saw the highlights and I'm going to have to talk to him about his footwork and I don't know, throwing the ball off his back foot. But when you can spin it 50 yards off your back foot and have poor mechanics and hit a wide receiver in stride, I guess maybe I should just let that be. So he's not only a really good player, he's a great kid. Known him since his freshman year, and he's just he's a good dude. So
where were you Friday night?
I was at Liberty at Pinnacle, and I barely escaped the rain. The game ended, got a couple interviews, and I was walking to the car. It started to downpour, so the timing on that was good.
Good. So. And then Saturday, ASU game. So it had nothing to do with the early start. It had nothing to do with the referees, although I read one person, Greg Moore wrote that the referees – hurt ASU, and I'm just like, come on now, we're not in market 320, you know, we're just better than that. You cannot blame the refs. All I know is in the ASU game, from my point of view, obviously ASU had them beat. Keaton Slovis has two fourth down touchdowns. Yeah, one's a tip, one's just a hell of a great throw. It looked like on the onside kick that Sean Slocum's, because he's a special teams coach for ASU, that they had it right. Like the front line is there to just block guys. But the player behind did not have it right. And so the onside kick, the special teams this weekend between ASU giving that game away and what happened with the Cardinals yesterday, but stick with ASU for a minute. What did you think of ASU in their opener?
It's one of those things, Brad, where for USC to win, like six or seven things had to happen. If ASU just would have gotten one of those six or seven things, ASU would have won the game, but it didn't happen. I was impressed at how, although it was sloppy, I thought it was really competitive. And I think those are both top 25 teams. I mean, ASU's young running backs look really good. Keaton Slovis is really good, even though he didn't always play really well. Yeah. But I think it sucks. It's a bad loss for ASU. There's no doubt about it. However,
yeah,
they were road underdogs to a ranked team, probably the best team in the Pac-12 South, and they should have won the game. So to me, there is a tiny little silver lining in all of that.
So we're going to hear from Herm in the next segment. We'll do more college football. in the next segment. I'll just say this. Clay Helton looked like the happiest man on the face of the planet when the way that game ended.
Of course.
Because he's going to get fired. You know, it's just going to start up again. If he doesn't win all of his games, he's fired. I thought the day of college football, okay, take out the U of A game getting canceled at the last minute by Utah. And what a mess in Utah today. This morning, Kyle Whittingham is saying, yeah, they've got backups, walk-ons that are going to end up having to play because COVID is completely out of control. So for those of you that were sending me notes in August saying, see, Utah's playing high school football. We're not playing high school. I'm just saying now, looking here in November, this whole mushroom cloud of COVID is starting to happen all over again. And for the most part, we got through it. Although, when Notre Dame beat Clemson and they rushed the field, I have to assume you saw some of this.
I did. I did.
Were you thinking, oh my gosh, they're rushing the field? I was not. I was not saying, oh, with COVID, what are they doing? That didn't hit me.
Kids are going to be kids.
Yes.
Like, college students are going to college students. Like, go down to Mill Avenue on a Thursday. Guess what? There's still kids out. I get it. You know, they beat Clemson, okay? They didn't beat Rutgers or Sparty or North Carolina State. They beat Clemson. And you know what? They wanted to celebrate, so to each their own, I guess.
It was an epic game.
It was a great game.
I mean, forget about Trevor Lawrence being on the sideline and out. And they probably are going to play each other again. And Trevor Lawrence will play in that game. And Notre Dame showed that they could play. Would Trevor Lawrence have beaten Notre Dame? I don't know. I don't know if Trevor Lawrence is out there, if it's a 35-14 game. Because Notre Dame's offense, pretty good, even with Ian Book's fumble. You know, they came back.
But outside of that fumble, Brad, I thought Ian Book played a hell of a game. I mean, like, he was a big reason why they won that game. And Notre Dame's legit top 2-3 team in the country. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and so Saturday night there was that. I will tell you, I thought it was pretty cool to see Chuba Purdy play in a lot of snaps at Florida State in the afternoon and Brock Purdy play Saturday night and set the all-time touchdown record at Iowa State. I think that's pretty cool for Arizona high school sports to have two brothers play at quarterback in college at major programs on the same day.
My friend said Chuba was run for his life. I didn't see any of the game.
He was.
My friend's a huge Florida State fan. He's like, yeah, Chuba played. I said, oh, how'd he do? It's like, it's hard to tell. Like, their offensive line is not good.
Oh,
and he was
my
running,
gosh.
So.
I was talking with Chuba's dad via text. He didn't say any of that, but it looked like it was a fire drill for him. So that takes
and
us.
One thing that was cool, Brad, just really quick, going back to USC, ASU. I mean, Keaton Slovis, Desert Mountain, Parker Lewis, the kicker for USC who had the great onside kick, Saguaro, Will Schaefer playing special teams for ASU, balling out, Saguaro. Like, it's cool on Saturday. It's these Arizona high school players. They're not just, like, on teams. They're really – everyone knows Spencer Rattler, of course. But, like, Ben Finley is the backup quarterback who saw quite a bit of action for North Carolina State.
Tyler Shuck.
Absolutely. A great debut for Oregon. It's cool to see. Okay.
No, that's why we do what we do.
That's true.
So that takes us to Christian Kirk catching touchdowns.
Right? Great segue. Right.
So I can't blame Cliff. I the overreaction, and there's times to bring the sledgehammer out and just hammer on a team. I watched Seattle yesterday. Man, their defense isn't good, or Josh Allen is just all world. I watched that game start to finish, and the Cardinals have already beaten Seattle once, and they're going to play them again a week from this Thursday up there. And Seattle's in first place and leads by a game because they lost. So to sit here and just lose your minds over Cliff Kingsbury going for it or not going for it on a 4th-and-1 when he went for it earlier, he played the percentages and played them right. Anybody in their right mind is saying, oh, that's too long of a field goal. You don't know football, okay? He looked like he used a sand wedge on a piece of a rock. Like, I don't know how you come up that short on a 49-yard field goal to tie the game. That's not that hard of a kick. I could never make it. but I don't get paid to go do that. Zane Gonzalez, flat. I hate using the word choke, but come on. 46 yards maybe he kicked that. Maybe.
NFL kickers, I mean, a 50-yard field goal for an NFL kicker isn't a big deal. Especially, I don't know if you saw the end of the Panthers game yesterday.
Yeah, I did. 63 yards outdoors with the wind.
67 yards. 67, and although it went much like my drive, it kind of spun to the right. It kind of faded. Yeah. It would have been good from 67 yards outside if it would have come between the uprights.
Yeah.
It would have set a record. Even the announcers are like, wow, that would have made it if it was a little bit more accurate. So
I'm fine if it's wide right or wide left. Then there's the debate is out there because the kicker still missed the kick and Cliff can be called into question. I can't question Cliff when he says, hey, go out there and let's tie this game up and keep going. You're indoors, okay? And you leave it short, not just a little short, way short. And so, yeah. So I saw people upset about how Kyler and DeAndre didn't go talk and shake hands after. No, you don't always have to. I'm one of those that on the pro level, you don't always have to go out on the field. And what we see on cameras isn't really reality. It could have been Kyler doing one of these, and we just didn't see it. Could have been DeAndre doing one of these, saying we didn't see it. I don't know, so I'm not going to get wound up about that stuff. All I know is they have Buffalo coming here. Buffalo's really good.
Yeah.
Like, no really doubt. Good.
I also think, though, Brad, that, you know, the Dolphins are a good team. Like, I know we don't hear a lot about the Dolphins, but they've got a good defense. They have a good young coach. They have, like, 9 million draft picks coming up. Yeah. They have Tua, who looked phenomenal in his first road start. Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, you lost to the Cowboys or the Jets or the Giants. Like, the Dolphins are a pretty legit team. Yes, it was a game the Cardinals should have won. But, you know, it's, you know, the NFL is the NFL for a reason.
If Kenyon Drake is healthy, does he get the 4th-and-1? In my opinion, he does. Chase Edmonds got a 6-yard carry and a 3-yard carry, the first two, okay? So first down, he gets 6. Second down, he gets 3. I'll take that all day long. You know, people are like, yeah, I love Chase Edmonds, but, you know, he just doesn't run as hard as Kenyon Drake. Well, he's a different guy.
Yeah, he's not nearly as big. He's a completely different player. I mean, I think, you know, it's easy to second-guess the head coach, okay? I just think on 4th-and-1, he did make the right decision to kick the field goal.
Yeah, tie the game.
Man, I mean, you're starting quarterback at over 100 rushing yards. If it's 4th and less than a yard, I mean, Kyler in space is just so hard to tackle. I would have liked to maybe see them go for it and just let Kyler, go get a yard. Okay, we'll figure out a play and you'll get a yard. But you know, again, Zane Gonzalez needs to be able to make a 49-yard field goal. That's the end of the story.
I'm not happy with him today, okay? And so there's that. The other side of it is I would like to see a game log of how many games DJ Humphries has had a false start in his career. This team continues to have pre-snap and post-snap penalties. And I don't know why that is. And it's not because Cliff Kingsbury is here. DJ Humphries had pre-snaps before. He had them before Cliff got here. He had them with Steve Wilks, and he had them with Bruce Arians. I don't know why it's that hard. They had 7 penalties again yesterday, and I don't know how many of them were pre-snap, but I know most of them were. When I'm watching the game, it's like, okay, there's another one. All right, there's another one. And gosh almighty, it shouldn't
happen. You're playing at home. You're playing at home, and there's like 4,
there's no crowd.
Fans.
Come on,
yeah. It's like,
watch the ball. Just simply watch the ball.
Just remember what the snap count is. That's all you have to do. So,
all right, we're gonna step aside here. We're gonna talk more about ASU, but do a deeper dive on the Pac-12. Pac-12's in trouble today. It's in trouble to the point where Cal is considering leaving the Bay Area and setting up shop potentially here in Arizona to get through their season. I'll explain that on the other side. Stay with us. All right, so I want to talk some Pac-12 here, and I'll get to the ASU stuff with Eric in a minute, but a deeper dive as to where we are here on Monday morning. Obviously, on Friday afternoon, the U of A game against Utah was canceled up in Salt Lake City. This morning, Kyle Whittingham, the head coach of the Utes, said that basically they've got to look at backups and walk-ons for their game against UCLA. The game was supposed to be on Friday this week. It's now been moved to Saturday. COVID is out of control up in Salt Lake City. They are on fire. Cal is supposed to play ASU this week. The game is supposed to be this Saturday night at 8:30. And Cal had to cancel their game because of one test. And if Cal had their campus on the other side of the bay, they would have been allowed to play. So what is going on in Berkeley in trying to get a football season going has gotten to the point where Cal, and this came, Rick Neuheisel talked about it this morning on a SiriusXM show. John Wilner wrote about it. I brought it up a while back, talking with coaches up there. It's to the point where Cal is saying, and I never would have considered this, but Cal is saying, we have to go somewhere where the restrictions just aren't nearly as tough. We've got to uproot and move our football team here in Berkeley out of Berkeley so that we can get in this football season. And this goes back to bubbling. This goes back to why didn't the Pac-12 consider putting their football programs in a bubble in Las Vegas or someplace where the restrictions just are not nearly as tough as they are. For Cal and Washington to be canceled at the last minute. For the Pac-12, who said, hey, it's our opening weekend, I already have to blow up four teams, two games. And now looking ahead saying, well, you know what, let's try to buy Utah some extra time so they can play this Saturday night. I mean, Eric, they're just making this stuff up on the fly to try to get anything in. Like ASU-Cal on ESPN2 at 8:30, I get it. Ray is going to take one for the team. They got the primo Fox slot last Saturday. Nope, this week you guys are going to be buried in Pac-12 way after dark over on ESPN2. So the way that the conference is going so far, my level of confidence of getting through this unscathed with the numbers nationally well over 120,000 per day now, I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's not looking good. But, you know, quickly just jumping back to the start time, yeah, ASU, Cal, 8:30, not an ideal window, but I'd much rather be on ESPN2 than be on the Pac-12 network, so is that. You know, the COVID just doesn't impact one team. That's the deal. Like, it, you know, Cal, if Cal has to pull up back, it impacts Cal, it impacts their upcoming opponent, and it may impact an opponent after that. That's that's the big sticking point. And the way these numbers are spiking, Brad, it's not pretty for the Pac-12, but it all circles back to our conversation. You know, like, the Pac-12 could be like the Big 12. You know, the Big 12 only has three conference games left of their 8-game schedule. The Pac-12 is only in the second week of their 6-game schedule. So, like, you know, hindsight being 2020, but still, if they would have started when everyone else, they would have been on the back half of it, not on the front half of it.
But imagine if you're Cal, and you bring up good points, but you're Cal, and your letter of intent day is 5 weeks from now. I mean, it's hard to believe that that's coming up, too. You have not been able to go out and see any of players. You're trying to do it all virtually. You're trying to coach the guys that are in place up there. And then you have games that are canceled. And you're in a part of the conference where they're basically saying you can't play. If your mom and daddy baller, you're looking at this saying, why exactly are we at Cal? It's too tough for us to get our kid on the field. And most of these parents think that their kid is going to go play professionally rather than let's just get a college education. That's a fact. And so if they come down here, I don't even know where they would go if they came down here. You know, who has fields? ACU has fields. They're playing. Their field, yeah. They just opened it up. But
I mean, they could, I mean, Ottawa? I don't think Ottawa's playing.
Have you been to Ottawa's fields?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I have. It's fine, but I mean, it's not, you know, they're an NAIA school. They're not a Pac-12 Power 5 school.
Yeah, but that's, so. I mean, that's, ASU could not say, yeah, let's bubble Cal here on campus. That's not going to happen.
Of course not.
Right. So if they are considering, and for John Wilner and Rick to both go out this morning and talk about how this is a distinct possibility, then I have to look around the state and say, would they go to NAU? That doesn't make sense.
I mean, I guess I don't think the Cardinals would go for it. They could practice inside State Farm. I mean, I'm just thinking of NAU's practicing already, so there's not really room at NAU either. They could – you know what they could do, honestly? They could practice at Scottsdale Community College. They could pick a junior college here.
True, because they're not playing JUCO anymore.
Correct, that still has fields. You know, the fields. You know, and they could always probably – I don't know. I know one Cal assistant has some connections locally to a high school here. They could probably figure out a way to get to that high school if they wanted to practice on field turf once in a while. Because that school is not far from Scottsdale Community College.
Yeah, Charlie Regal with Chaparral. No, I get it. I get what you're saying.
It's the whole relocation. I mean, you're
uprooting everything, all your resources,
yes,
trainers, and essentially you're going to say, would it get to a point where Cal would say, we're going to play ASU on a Saturday night, and then we're going to stay in Arizona, and then we're going to drive to Tucson, and we're going to play U of A. And then whoever's out of state, U of A or ASU, will play Washington State in Tucson, or we'll play them in Tempe.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, but it's not out of the possibility. It's really all about finding a venue. I mean, number one, finding a safer location than the Bay Area, and then just finding a venue of... But I don't think ASU would want the Cal players using their locker room, you know, in season with all the COVID stuff. It's a mess.
Well, and you'd also consider the field getting chewed up.
Right.
But here, hey, look, Ray Anderson sat next to Larry Scott. Ray is in a position of authority on all of this. Ray has got to be one that is not going to say, well, we're not going to help you down here in Arizona. To me, it's... Could you practice over at Phoenix Rising Stadium? You could practice over there. I think your point about community colleges, I hadn't thought of that. That's a great point. You know, Chaparral has field turf. Charlie Regal was the coach there. Yeah, there's a connection with the school district.
Sure.
But those numbers, they are on fire with COVID. And
yeah, we have our own problems here with COVID. I mean, is Arizona really the best spot?
But the governor's not doing anything here. See, over there, Governor Newsom is very hard. And then where they are located, could they just move to the other side of the bay and say, well, we're just going to be over here and we're going to play? I can't believe that it's gotten this crazy. But I can't believe that the Pac-12, when they sat down and said, yeah, let's get this off and running, that the first weekend, they'd have to blow up two games.
Mm-hmm.
The first weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're Kevin Sumlin, and hey, by the way, you have USC this week. You already had one game that got blown up.
Yep.
And your opener is against USC. You have no practice. The U of A players found out when they're getting on the plane. How deflating is that for a 17, 18, 19-year-old? Hey, guys, get off the plane. We're not going to play now. They thought they're going to go.
We saw it last week here on the high school level. I think there are a couple of schools, maybe Saguaro, that found out the day of that there was no game or the night before. It's just like, wow, it's tough.
Okay, so that takes us back over to ASU. ASU, Colorado, they're already 0-1. Basically, in the Pac-12 this year, you just don't know who's going to have enough games and who is. So to say the season is over... Yeah, the chase for a national championship to be in the Final Four is over. I think both Oregon and USC are in a space where if they were to win out, either one of those teams could be considered to be in the Final Four. Because Notre Dame's going to play Clemson again, right? So if Clemson wins, beats Notre Dame, is the debate going to be, well, you know what, the ACC is not going to get one in. We saw how Georgia just got beat into submission over the weekend by Florida.
Yeah,
so
Kyle Trask had like 475 passing yards against Georgia. That's insane to think about. He's a really good quarterback, but I saw those stats. I was like, 475 passing yards against Georgia?
But I think the worst part for, and this takes me to ASU, the worst part for the Notre Dame win is Cincinnati. You guys don't have a shot now. I don't see where Cincinnati has a leg to stand on. I don't see it. North Carolina still plays Notre Dame. So they could get themselves into it if they win that game. ASU plays Colorado. Colorado comes here after just an up and down performance back and forth against UCLA. And for Herm Edwards, so here's some of Herm. This was after they lost, after the game, just what a gut wrencher. I would say top 10 loss list for ASU all time. If you think about, obviously the Rose Bowl with Jake is number one. But if you think about everything that was on the line, you're coming out of COVID, you're trying to set a deal, you're on national television in prime window for people to see your program. The Pac-12 is sitting there for you to have this year. After all the hype, you're up 13. You're up 13 with 3 minutes to go. And you just go, So here is Herm Edwards on learning off of this loss.
We had an opportunity to finish the game in the fourth quarter. We talked about it all week. This game would go down to the fourth quarter. Last two seasons we played USC. Whether it was here at home, it got into the fourth quarter, and we had a lead, and we didn't finish the game. And you got to give them credit; they made the plays they needed to make. We did not, whether it was on offense, defense, or special teams. So you have to give those guys credit. And I think going forward, I told our football team that we got to grow from this moment because when you get an opportunity like this, they're very difficult to find. And you put yourself in this position, and you got, what, 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, and you couldn't close it out. And so that's what we got to work on going forward.
You know, Eric.
What a classy answer, Brad. I mean, that is just the epitome of class, what Herm Edwards said. Didn't point the finger, didn't talk about the refs, didn't talk about one or two plays. USC made the plays. We didn't make the plays. We've played close games with them. We have some things to clean up. We're going to be fine. Like, that just, I wish every coach would just take that approach. You know, like, it, you know, it wasn't like, it wasn't the, you didn't nitpick. The bottom line is, yeah, ASU had several opportunities to win. However, USC made the plays when they had to. That's pretty simple. It's just, you know, nice to hear that.
It is. I agree with you. But the facts are Herm's record is a few games above 500, right? And so when you have Antonio Pierce and you have a veteran defensive co-defense coordinator, Marvin Lewis, and there's two touchdowns that are given up in the final 3.5 minutes, you're going to have a fan base that is going to say, what are we doing here exactly? There's even some that reached out to me and said, you know, Todd Graham would have lost that game. Guys, Todd Graham's gone. He's in Hawaii. Knock it off. I think, and here's Herm on, we'll give Herm his chance here. This is missed opportunities. This was Herm Edwards after the loss to USC on missed opportunities.
Yeah, and that's what I told him. We have to learn how to finish. And we played a lot of young guys today, and you could see the nerves for some of them at the receiver position. I thought the runners ran pretty well, to be quite honest. And I thought our offensive line did a nice job of creating some lanes for running for the most part. I thought Jaden did some things with his legs, extended some plays, but we didn't get enough out of our passing game, per se. And I think that's what we have to build on. You know, we lost Frank early in the game and played with a lot of guys with not a lot of experience, but they're going to grow from this.
No, I would agree with that.
And like, I think, Brad, that you know, anyone that says Herm's record is two games above 500 just doesn't – it just don't get it. I mean, like, he – when you take over a program in college football, it's like – gutting and remodeling a house. It doesn't happen quickly. Right. You know, you've got Graham recruits who are playing for Herm, and then you have Herm recruits who are playing for Herm, and then you got to weed out those players. And then there's a transition. Herm's first year, fine. Last year, better. This year, clearly more talented than the last two seasons.
Bigger. There were times when I was watching the two lines of Crosswell, where the offensive line for ASU came out there against USC. It was like, oh my gosh, that's a group of pachyderms out there.
And you could say the same thing about ASU's defensive line. They've got some big dudes. You talked about it with Antonio Pierce this offseason. Why are they recruiting the East Coast? Because the East Coast has bigger players than the West Coast, period. So we can lament about this loss to USC, but I see two true freshman running backs. I see a really good quarterback. I see talent at the skill positions. I see Merlin Robertson dropping in coverage and making a diving interception. Like, there's so many good things that happen in that game outside of the end.
Yeah. Well, and so now they have Colorado this week. Well,
Cal, right?
No, I'm Cal. I'm sorry. Yeah, Cal. No. Yeah, Cal this week.
Cal. What did I say? Colorado. Well, for now. You said Colorado. For now, they have Cal.
For now, they have Cal. Yeah. No, it's like there's been conversation in the last 24 hours of UCLA and ASU having to play each other. That they would just flip the script and say, it's kind of like Saguaro two weeks ago playing Castile in 24 hours notice.
You know, that's really where we're at. It's good to see that stuff.
Yeah. All right. We step aside here. And on the other side, we have to talk about Alex Trebek because that was, and some other stuff too that's going on in the world after this timeout. All right. Before we get out of here, did you watch Jeopardy much? We all watched Jeopardy, didn't we?
From time to time. I wasn't a consistent viewer because it made me feel stupid, but I did watch it from time to time. So
I don't know anybody who didn't like Alex Trebek. And when the news came out that Alex Trebek had passed away and he was going through prostate cancer last year, and then he came back to the show and he's trying to grind through it. Like, over the weekend, you have the Biden announcement and you have his speech, and then Alex Trebek passes away, and it was as though most everybody stopped, because most everybody, it's kind of like Bob Barker with The Price is Right.
Sure.
There's just those guys.
Pat Sajak, I think, would be in that same category.
Yeah.
The Mount Rushmore of game show hosts.
Yeah, I saw where Rich Eisen was talking about it on his show, and how, you know, Dan Patrick's talking about it on his show, where that's something they both thought they would be doing or would like to do or something. And like, Jeopardy, to me, I agree with you. There's times where I would sit there and play, and if it was one category, and I would just zip through, like, oh, I'm pretty good. And then they get to, like, four other categories, like, well, I would have no shot at this show.
Right.
And I never saw him get flustered. Like, last year, who's the guy that kept winning last year? And he kept winning and winning and winning. And
I know who you're talking about.
And I think there was some times where I look at Alex, and he would be like sneering at him, like, you spoiled little brat, you know. But gosh, what an institution. And I don't remember when the show first started, like the first host passed away. That show's not just going to have the plug pulled on it, I wouldn't think.
No, it's very popular.
Yeah.
You can tell. I mean, it's usually, I think, isn't it slotted right around like the 5 and 6 o'clock news, like right in that 6:30 window or that 5:30 window?
Let me just put it to you this way. So when I worked at Channel 3, we carried Jeopardy. Okay. And if there was any breaking news, and you're right, it would hit at 6:30 or it would hit at 7. Okay. I think it was Entertainment Tonight, 6:30 to 7. Then at 7, Jeopardy would hit. And then Wheel of Fortune, 7 to 8. Yeah, it was 7 to 8. Yep. If for any reason there was breaking news, the phones would just never stop ringing at the desk saying, get this off, I want Jeopardy on. It wouldn't matter if it's a house fire right next door to you in Scottsdale, and if it didn't impact somebody else's life and Jeopardy wasn't there, they wouldn't care. We've got to see Jeopardy.
Well, and I'm sure some diehard college football fans were sort of put off at the fact that President-elect Biden would actually, you know, decide to address the nation during Oregon, Stanford, and during Notre Dame, Clemson. But people will be people.
People will be people. Yeah. All right. Good stuff there. Good show today. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of Everything and Nothing. The show repeats for the next 24 hours. We're going to go work on our TV show now over on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. We are self-funded. When you see these sponsors pop up, please support them. They've supported us for almost 9 years. We appreciate their partnership. Have a great Monday.